This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, everyone. Rob Guest from football.london here, and welcome to the latest episode of Golden Guest Talk Tottenham, sponsored by NordVPN. Joining me as ever, it's Alistair Gold. Ali, you well?
I am. I hope you are. You sound very bright and breezy for a man whose club has had a points deduction this week, which I should point out to people, in the last podcast we did, we weren't aware that happened as we were recording. And I had assumed afterwards that Guesty had just been incredibly ultra-professional while that news broke that his club was going to get knocked further down the Premier League. And he hadn't actually found out. So not to say that you're not normally ultra-professional, but I wasn't quite as impressed as I originally was. But good to have a little second kind of bonus pod this week, because we've got a fair few bits and pieces to talk about. It won't be a long one. It's just a little kind of one to tide everyone over until the big early kickoff on Saturday at St James's Park. A few little bits and pieces for us to chat and discuss.
Yes, so we've got Saturday's game against Newcastle United. That's on the agenda. We're also going to be taking a look at Tottenham's loan players. But before that, some news from the Premier League has just come out just before we started recording. So, Ali, do you want to fill everyone in on that news?
Yes, an unexpected little addition to our pod discussion, which we weren't expecting, just suddenly emerged as we were about to hit the red button to record. So the Premier League have announced at a Premier League shareholders meeting today, clubs unanimously agreed to the introduction of semi-automated offside technology. The new system will be used for the first time in the Premier League next season, and is anticipated the technology will be ready to be introduced after one of the autumn international breaks. The technology will provide quicker and consistent placement of the virtual offside line based on optical player tracking, and will produce high-quality broadcast graphics to ensure an enhanced in-stadium and broadcast experience for supporters. It's got to be a good thing, isn't it? I think just get it closer and quicker to what we need it to be.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, I think VAR has helped with the offsides, but the issue is just the amount of time it takes. There's probably been some examples where it's been 4 or 5 minutes, and you want those quick decisions, and hopefully this will help.
Yeah, it was the World Cup, wasn't it, where they had, I think it was there, that they had some aspect. I don't know whether it's exactly the same type that they'll use in the Premier League, but it did feel like a much quicker process.
Yeah, I think it is what they had in the World Cup. It's something needs to change, and obviously Premier League are looking to do that, and yeah, fingers crossed it will be a good thing and doesn't follow down the same route as VAR, and we have a number of controversial decisions every week to speak about.
I know. I wonder what Ange is going to say. We'll have to ask him tomorrow at the press conference. He's not a fan of technology, although I think he's a bit like me in that, you know, the goal line technology is absolutely fine. That's great. Even like with the ridiculous one we had with Brennan Johnson the other day, it wasn't over the line. That's fine. If it's not over the line, even if it's by a millimetre, it's not legally a goal. So that's fine. And I wonder, and I hope that this kind of provides some aspect of that, pretty much a definitive, decisions on things. And mainly, like you say, quickly. So we just get on with the game and we don't have to. I hate where they can't celebrate. I hate that, what they've done to the game in that aspect. So, yeah, hopefully that fixes that.
Right, we'll move on to the players who are currently playing away from Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on loan. We'll start with Jed Spence, who has been in the headlines today. He's on loan at Genoa in Italy. Their sporting director, Marco Ottolini, he's been speaking to Caught Offside about Jed and what the future holds. And a couple of key lines in there. I think one of them is basically Genoa are in contact with Tottenham and they're going to evaluate a deal over the next few months. That just gives them and Spurs time basically to understand their positions, and they want to get Jed's perspective as well on a permanent move. It's been an okay loan spell so far for the player. I think 9 appearances in Serie A, 5 of those from the start, 4 of those coming from the bench. 7 games left in the season. I think all Jed can do now, you know, is try and make his case, and whether that's Genoa or other interested clubs at home and abroad, just to spark a bit of interest in his services, because, you know, 2 years on from his move to Spurs, it's not gone to plan. It really is a big, big summer for the player.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a funny loan move. I keep looking at it in different ways. You could look at it and see that he's not a regular starter. He's not starting every game for Genoa. But then you could also counter that by saying, but he's already got more minutes than he did at Leeds, and far more than he got at Spurs, which, let's be honest, it was about 40 minutes, I think, in total at Spurs. Yeah. It's been okay. He's had some games he started and he's come off at half time. He's had one game, certainly I can remember, when he came on at half time. So they looked to him to change things. And he's had some quite good performances. I think he was particularly good against Juventus, if I remember correctly. It helped them keep a clean sheet. And he's done that, though. Like, what was it, Rennes, wasn't it, when he played against PSG and they raved about him? It's almost like he's a bit of a big game player. Yeah, it's the only thing that slightly worried me about those quotes was there was a mention of Jed can do more, isn't there? I think there was in there. Yeah. And it's like, I didn't want to hear that again. Just kind of feels like that's the theme. That's what we keep hearing at each kind of club he's gone to. And to be fair, I don't know if we heard that entirely at Rennes. I think that's probably one where there was an injury towards the end of the season and he just was essentially filling a gap for their right backs to come back from injury from. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know whether they'll end up staying at Genoa or not. I read those quotes and they almost seemed to me like, yeah, we haven't decided yet. There were, you know, there was aspects to it that I thought were quite promising, that they do like him and he has settled in well, which is great. But yeah, I don't know whether we'll end up seeing him as a Genoa player kind of going forward or not. I mean, some people have asked, like, oh, can Ange make him, you know, a superstar? Can he be a right back for Spurs next season? I would pretty much say, I'd go as far as a 95% chance of that not happening. Ange just did not fancy him. Last summer didn't really like the look of him from what he saw. That was why he didn't really play and he was heading off. And even when he came back from the Leeds loan, he was sent to train with the under-21s. He wasn't part of the first team thing. So while I get it and I get the fact that, you know, he's certainly got a hell of a lot of ability and talent, I just don't think he's a Postecoglou player. And I think Postecoglou seems to feel that as well. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, he's still got a fair chunk of his contract left. That would have been quite a long contract. I'm trying to think now. He signed 2 summers ago, wasn't it? I'd imagine it was 5 or 6 year deal.
So another 3 or 4 years left to go, really.
Exactly. So, I mean, the option in the Genoa deal seemed to be very low, which kind of suggests they're just willing to take anything for him, which is not a great kind of look either. Yeah, it just hasn't worked. I do feel for him because there is, well, how do I say? I don't feel for him because I do think there's aspects of Jed that hasn't helped himself. And certainly the manager comments at various clubs have suggested that. However, I do feel for almost the wasted talent. But again, I don't want to go too heavy on that because it does feel like on the whole, the Genoa loan has been quite a good one. I wouldn't say it's been an absolute resounding success, but definitely it feels like he's got back on track in certain aspects. And yeah, we'll see what the summer brings. If anything, hopefully it sets him up for a move this summer. You'd imagine probably another loan move, maybe. Maybe get someone that kind of takes him over the season and really builds his value up. But yeah, it's all about him getting back to where he needs to be and where his talent dictates he should be, because he can be a very, very good player.
I suppose the thing with Genoa is they're probably not going to be flush with a lot of money in the summer like other clubs, because basically they're a mid-table Serie A club and they've done really well this season. To say they got promoted back to Serie A at the beginning of this season, got a chance of finishing in the top half as well. So
the longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You know, they may, in the end, decide the money's better spent elsewhere, but they'll come to that decision over the coming weeks and months. But I think for Jed, he just needs a permanent move away from Spurs, ideally, just to get his career back on track and hopefully getting back to those levels that he showed at Nottingham Forest, what in the end, you know, resulted in Spurs making a move for the player. So we'll move on from Jed.
Just very quickly. The only thing I was thinking about is cash-wise, they have the Dragosin money. Goodmanson looks like he's probably going to go in the summer as well. Spurs quite interested in him as well. So whether they kind of have quite a bit of cash and suddenly think, but like you say, you know, as a potential backup right back, it is, I mean, what was the report was a 10 million euro, which is what, about 7.5, 8 million, something
probably
like that.
8.5, yeah, something.
Yeah. So it's a fair whack maybe for an Italian club to play on a backup right back. But yeah, but we'll see. We'll see.
Right, who shall we speak about next? Because there's quite a few on the loan list. Alejo Veliz.
Yeah, we could talk about Alejo Veliz. I mean, the interesting thing about the loan list, he's not one of those, is that there's so many players with a year left on their contract in it and decisions to be made. But that's not the case with young Alejo. It's just another loan move. This one especially, that just, I did think at the time it was a sudden big jump. That was my only fear about it. It was a young striker who was playing a handful of minutes here and there occasionally from the bench for Spurs, was suddenly going as the number 10 to Sevilla, a team also kind of been struggling. You know, they need kind of a real sudden influx of ability in that team. And I did think it was a bit of a big shout for him to go in there and suddenly be the player they needed. And it kind of unfortunately looks like that's been the case. He hasn't got a lot of game time in the last month or so. Certainly hasn't got any game time in the last 2 weeks because they haven't had a match. I'm presuming they were going to play one of the Copa del Rey finalists, Athletic Club or Mallorca. But yeah, just hasn't worked for him either. I'm guessing maybe it was quite a good deal for Spurs financially. That's a guess. I don't know how much would be involved in a deal for a young 20-year-old striker, but on the face of it, you could have maybe thought of some other moves that could have worked for him. I know language-wise, I guess it's a good move. Settling in maybe is a bit easier there, but yeah, just hasn't worked for him yet. I don't know how much it'll benefit him. Bear in mind, this is a young guy who was playing regular football in Argentina. It's not like he kind of needed to be suddenly shown what first-team football's like. So yeah, I kind of feel like that could have been a better chosen destination for him.
It screams a bit of Jed Spence Tottenham club signing move because I think it's very much, I think it's Kike Sanchez Flores, the former Watford manager, who's in charge there. Veliz has been in and out of the squad at times. And I think the same goes for Hannibal, who joined Sevilla on loan from Manchester United at the turn of the year as well. And very much just seems as sporting directors signed them. Manager's not right keen on them, not gone to play them. But yeah, fingers crossed it'll change for Veliz in the coming weeks because he definitely needs to get some more minutes under his belt, especially after coming back from that injury as well, what he sustained. I think it was the Bournemouth game, wasn't it? New Year's Eve. But yeah, it's just one of these things for Spurs and the loan players. But I'm sure it's the same with a lot of clubs. You never guaranteed your players going out on loan to be playing every single minute, but there's been a number of examples for Spurs in recent years where the loan moves just haven't really gone to plan. And I think we've probably said the same about maybe Alfie Devine's loan move to Plymouth.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think for Ashley Phillips, it's been a terrific loan move. Yeah. I think he's really done well there and getting lots of game time. For Alfie, it's been a bit stop-start, even though he did have Ian Foster there before he lost his job recently, but obviously he like people everywhere would know this, but he was his England, was it under 19s or under 18s coach back in the day. So he knows Alfie quite well, but even under him, he wasn't starting every game, was kind of coming in and out. Then he managed to pick up in that final game for Ian Foster his first ever red card as a senior pro. So that meant he missed last week's game or the weekend's game. And then he was back on the bench in midweek. I think they were playing QPR. It was a bit of a basement yeah. battle game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And which there was a draw, but they, yeah, he didn't come off the bench in that one. So, yeah, I'd agree. It's a difficult one. It's one of those where you take him away from where he was playing week in, week out to bump him up a level to the championship. On the face of it, I understand it completely. And I think we said at the time it made a lot of sense. But then it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked as of yet. He's getting the experience of a higher level. But then I guess, you know, for a player that we were hoping maybe this summer would be, you know, part of the preseason plans again and really maybe push his case. I wonder if it's going to actually knock his confidence a bit and maybe they'll think he needs to go back into championship for another go. But especially with Lucas Bergvall coming along as well, who I know we're going to speak about. So, yeah, not great, but for Ashley Phillips, a good move at least.
Yeah, in terms of the others in the championship, Joe Roden excelling for Leeds United, I think that should be quite an easy deal. You'd think it's a complete, especially if Leeds win promotion to the Premier League. They're in a three horse race with Leicester and Ipswich. All three teams didn't win in midweek, so it makes it a really, really exciting end to the season. Leicester did lose away at Millwall. Japhet Tanganga is getting quite a lot of game time there. I think it's 14 starts from 15 appearances.
That's massive, especially with the knee issues he's had in the past. Yeah. I actually looked at it thinking he probably wouldn't have played the midweek game as well. And I looked at it, oh, wow, he did 90 in that as well. So it's brilliant for him. I'm so happy for him because he's just had a nightmare with injuries. He's had such a stop-start career and he's doing so well there. So, yeah, he and Joe, I think you could probably look at reasonable moves for them this summer because of these loan spells. We talk about the other ones not working, but these two moves for them have been absolutely spot on.
They have another move in the EFL that's worked. Matthew Craig at Doncaster. He's getting 100% regular minutes under his belt. Doncaster, I think about 4 points off the playoffs to put together a bit of a late run.
Seven in a row, that one.
Yeah, might be a tad too late to get in there, but certainly put themselves in the mix. And I think the confidence is there at the moment. So I think they'll have one eye on the playoff, and what an end to the season that'd be for Matthew Craig if he can help them into the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a move that's kind of gone a little bit under the radar maybe because obviously we've been including him in our loan roundups, but maybe people weren't too aware who he was and obviously he's gone to a slightly lower level. If anyone's forgotten, he's made his Premier League debut for Spurs. You know, he came off the bench, didn't he, under Ryan Mason that final game of the season with George Abbott last year. And he's done incredibly well. He is a mainstay of their midfield. Scotland under 21 international. Like I say, yeah, Grant McCann's side, they won seven in a row. They're absolutely flying at the moment. Like, I don't know whether it is going to come too late, but he's played, I think it's 14 times for him. He's scored a goal, he's got an assist. And that's for a defensive midfielder as well. And they love him there. And I'm very interested to see what happens for him next season, whether he then steps up to something like the Championship, he could do. But massive one. And there's been two really good other under-the-radar loans that people might not be aware of, and they're goalkeepers. Good. Josh Keeley's in the National League at Barnet, and he's doing very well there. They're going to have playoff football at the end of the season to see if they go up. So that's going to be a massive experience for him and the pressure that brings and everything. If you're not aware, Josh Keeley's only 20 years old, Republic of Ireland under 21 international. A lot of high hopes for him at Spurs, you know, with potential goalkeeping departures this season, this summer, maybe one or two. He might maybe step up into a bigger role, we'll see. But goalkeeping loans are so difficult to find. So even, you know, finding one in the National League is massive for him. And young Sam Archer, he's at Barton Rovers, which is right down the leagues. It's in the Southern League Central Division One. And he's got four clean sheets in a row. He's only 17 years old. And this is what they call a work experience loan because he's that young. But he's gone down there. He's playing, you know, I used to cover that level of football a long time ago. Funnily enough, they drew 0-0 against one of the teams I used to cover many years ago, Waltham Abbey. And I know what a physical, tough league that is. You know, that kind of level there is, there's people just trying to make a little bit of money on the side to kind of for their lives. There's people that have dropped down from Football League or even Premier League Academy. So it's such a mishmash of talent and ages. And for a 17-year-old to go in there as a goalkeeper and keep four clean sheets in a row, it's really fantastic. So, very kind of just excited for him. Just must be a great move. I'm trying to think who else we haven't covered. Troy?
Yeah, Troy Parrott's doing well in the Eredivisie with Excelsior Rotterdam. I think it's 7 goals, 4 assists so far this season.
He's been out for a little while. He's been out for last month or so. He's had an adductor injury, I think it is. Abdominal injury, which has been a pain. But other than that, yeah, he was doing very well.
Yeah, Sergio Reguilón at Brentford.
Agent Reggie.
Yeah, 2 assists at the weekend against Aston Villa, which has helped Spurs out in that battle for Champions League football. Bit of a mixed season for the player. In and out of the Manchester United team when he was there on loan, getting more football under his belt at Brentford. And fingers crossed that will, you know, either become a permanent move or help him get a permanent move away from Tottenham in the summer. And then the final one on the loan list, your hero, your favourite player, Tongi on the belly. How's he doing?
Not so well. Not so well. Yeah, it hasn't worked out for Tongi. He's playing very, very little football. They had a weird kind of match at the weekend. I say match even is a loose term for it, because it was a Turkish Super Cup final on Sunday, or it was meant to be. Galatasaray up against Fenerbahce. Big showpiece event. However, it had already been rescheduled. I think it was supposed to be played in December. I think it might have been played out in Saudi Arabia originally as well. It was somewhere else. Didn't happen then. Got moved to this Sunday, last Sunday. Fenerbahce were very unhappy with that. They wanted it to be postponed because they had a Europa League quarterfinal against Olympiacos tonight, actually, I think it is. So they wanted more preparation time. It's funny that a lot of European leagues do that. They kind of help out their teams. The Premier League just batters them. No, we're more important. And so they wanted it rescheduled. The league said no. So what they did is a bit of a protest, or quite a big protest. They sent out a youth team who played the first minute of the match. Galatasaray scored through Mauro Icardi in the first 50 seconds. Fenerbahce then took their youth team off the pitch a minute in. So the game was kind of then became null and void, and it was a 1-0 win essentially to Galatasaray. And then I think they realised, oh no, we've got like a stadium with fans in it who have paid for a ticket. What are we going to do? So Galatasaray ended up playing a game between first team players, or some first team players, and reserve team players, of which I have no idea what the score was, but certainly some photos we've seen, Tongi appears to have been involved. He wasn't in the starting lineup for the cup final. He was on the bench, but he seems to have been involved. And what did make me chuckle, because it's classic Tongi, he was playing in his beanie hat that he wears all the time. And I have seen that man train in that beanie hat in the most ridiculous temperatures on preseason tours. So he can absolutely do it. I just found it hilarious. So yeah, played in a final that never really was. He's barely cobbled together about 400, 500 minutes across his appearances this season. It's barely been anything. He's not starting hardly any games at all, maybe one every few months. Just absolute horror show of a move that hasn't worked for him at all. And he's surrounded by Spurs players. There's loads of ex-Spurs players there. Carlos Vinicius, Serge Aurier, Davinson Sanchez. It's still not getting anywhere with them. So I don't know what Spurs are going to do with Tongi in the summer. I literally feel like they kind of put him out on like a kind of a car boot sale just to try and get him out of the club. I just don't know how anyone's going to take him after. If you can't go to the Turkish League, with no disrespect to them, but judging on the other levels he's played at, to go to the Turkish League and barely start a match, who's going to take him off their hands this summer?
I think they're really going to struggle. And I think it's last year of his contract.
It is, yeah.
As well. And he's had, you know, disastrous loans at Lyon and Napoli. They've not really worked for him either. So he's going to be so hard, you know, to get rid of him. I just wonder if they go, we'll just pay him up and go, right, we'll call it a day. But then the player's got to, you know, agree to that as well, I'm sure.
I mean, if you're as a player getting exactly what you would have got anyway, I suppose it's a no-brainer. It's like almost like a redundancy payoff type thing, isn't it? But if they have to come to some kind of compromise, I'm guessing you'd probably think, well, why? I've just sat in Turkey essentially for a year not doing much, so what difference does it make? Oh, it's just been such a disaster. It has. As someone who just brought with him such high hopes, he's absolutely dashed them at every turn. And I'd love to be able to stick up for him and say, oh, but, you know, he's got his talent and all that. But I'm sorry. But if you're going to keep going to, you know, even Napoli last season didn't really play a big role in their title drive. He was there in the odd match, started a few.
But won the Scudetto kind of, though, didn't he?
Well, that's, yeah, but it's one of those, isn't it? You've kind of, that'll be on his CV, and I'm sure he'll be very proud to have it on his CV. But will he have truly played a huge part in getting it? I don't think so. I just have this feeling he's going to look back at the end of his career and think, oh, I was great, I was, and everyone else is like, so what did you do? And you're like, I was on the bench for all of these teams, and it's just such a waste of such a supreme talent.
It is. A couple of other players to discuss quickly. This is in regard to Tottenham's future. Luka Vucevic, he is in Poland with Radomiak Radom at the moment.
I'm glad you had to say that, not me.
Yeah, he's doing really, really well for the Polish team. Playing regularly, he scored two goals already. I think one of them was a bit of a bullet header. It actually went close to a hat-trick of headers in that match. Then he scored a few weeks ago. Really good finish in the area after the ball had fallen to him. And he did get an assist to his name the other week. Not a classic defence splitting ball. It was just simple pass back to the goalkeeper, who's then booted it from 18 yards, and it's gone over the opposition goalkeeper.
All counts.
Very much does. Did see highlight of him last Friday playing. I'm not going to pronounce the Polish team's name. Absolutely murder it. But they were winning 2-0 on the stroke of half-time. The opposition had a free kick on the edge of the area. And can you remember the free kick Netherlands played in the World Cup against Argentina? Rather than shooting, played it to someone next to the wall.
Yeah,
they did that. Vucevic, who was in the wall, was alert to the danger and, you know, managed to slide in, somehow get a block on the ball, went for a corner. He celebrated. Four of his teammates came over to celebrate with him as well. So really, really... good play from the player, and I think he'll be playing at a higher level next season, which will only help Tottenham out.
How old is he now? 16 or 17?
17, yeah. I think he just turned 17, turns 18, I think next February, and it's 18 when he can link up with Spurs. So still a bit of time to go, but he's definitely making a name for himself in Poland. Another one, Lukas Bergvall. Really, really good start to 2024 for the player. In total for Djurgården and Sweden under 21s, 4 goals and 5 assists. For Djurgården, playing as an attacking midfielder. He's actually going to be playing in the Swedish Cup final on May the 1st against Malmö. Luckily for him, because it's July the 1st when he links up with Spurs, the Swedish Cup comes before that time. On the way to the final in the semis against AIK, scored a really good header. And he scored a brilliant header as well on the opening day of the Allsvenskan season. So I think in terms of Bergvall, probably a lot of people only know him for the qualities with his feet, but he's displayed how good he is in the air as well. And then on Monday, they're playing Häcken at home in the league, 3-0 down. After 87 minutes, managed to come back and draw 3-3. So he played a role in the second goal, winning the ball on the edge of the area, forcing the keeper into a save. And then they managed to complete the turnaround. So Bergvall's going well.
So he's going to be able to hack it in the Premier League then?
Yeah, that's terrible. But yeah, we'll go with it.
It's good for him. It kind of feels like he's stepped up his level with the kind of move to Spurs, almost like he knows all eyes are on him now. And that's a great sign. I think the pressure's maybe on him in the spotlight even more. And he's taken it in his stride by the sounds of it.
Very much. I think really, really impressive loan spell. And I think he probably made it clear after he's moved to Spurs, he was going to do all he can to help Jurgard and, you know, be in a really good position before he goes. And for them to be in the Swedish Cup final, they've won it five times in the past. I think the last victory in the Cup was about 2018. So you never know. Might be able to lead them to glory in that and put them in a good position in the Allsvenskan as well. Something else what I noted when I was on Djurgården's website is they're actually sponsored by NordVPN. Yeah.
Look at that segue. I love it.
Yeah, so I was having a look and it says, we are happy to state that NordVPN is extending its strategic partnership with Djurgården Football for a third year in a row. And I think we'll be closing in on 3 years as well with NordVPN.
Yeah, I think it is. God, look at you. Look at you. Yeah. Very on brand in your search for how Spurs players are doing. I love it. Perfectly timed as well to have a quick chat about NordVPN. And like you say, it's been a few years now we've been partnered up with them, and they've obviously always been very good to us, and great that we can kind of spread the word of them to other people and all of the communications we get. Honestly, I still do. I'd probably say I get at least a few messages either on social media, or sometimes we get the odd email or comments under the YouTube videos just to say that it's worked for them and how helpful it's been. And yeah, no, I do enjoy that. It's one of the stranger things that I could never have predicted that we'd have get people contact about. Kind of, we always think, yeah, they're going to tell us whether they like or dislike what we're doing. But to actually get people telling us about how the people that sponsor our podcast have done, it's nice. It's very different. And, and I can understand why, because it is the fastest VPN in the world. There's no buffering, there's no lagging, and you can stream your favorite shows and anywhere in the world without your bandwidth throttling. Something I've done many, many times over the years, whether it's watching various Marvel, Star Wars related shows I'll watch, or dramas or whatever, or movies, to be able to kind of watch them abroad from the services that I've already paid for over here in the UK is very, very helpful. And also from a security aspect, if I'm using public Wi-Fi, it can just help a little bit to lock down some of the things in your device to stop those nasty people getting in and getting them out of there. The Outlander NordVPN subscription is cheaper for you in the long run. That's because you can purchase streaming services or bookings from other countries at a much cheaper rate. So Guesty's, always telling me that when he's booking his many, many holidays, he will look at the options of booking them from countries abroad using NordVPN so that he can, potentially get a better deal out of it as well, rather than booking them from the UK. And honestly, it means you're kind of paying out for Nord, but you're saving money overall. There's a whole host of other benefits from signing up to NordVPN, so why not give it a go? To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/goldguest. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support our podcast every time you take up that plan. The link is in the episode description box in case you just missed it there.
Right, we'll move on to Saturday's game against Newcastle United at St James's Park, 12:30 kickoff in the Northeast. Looking forward to it?
Not really, no. I hope that it was one of those where I've got no expectations and it ends up being a great one, because, there's the early start, there's the memories of last season, which still make me shudder every time I think about it. You and I sitting there in the press box getting absolutely soaked by the rain because there's no cover. Our laptops getting soaked, fear of just getting electrocuted as well. And watching probably the worst game of Spurs football I've ever seen Spurs go out there and do. Honestly, we thought it was like a goal a minute at one point. Just felt like they were going to end up losing 20-0 or something. It was shambolic. It was the end of the Christian Stellini era. It was trying to play a back four that had no idea how to play a back four. It was in front of a noisy crowd who were going to be like that again, because, Newcastle put a little bit of a form together again. I think now they've got less competitions to worry about and some of their injuries subsiding. they've, you know, been able to start getting back to what they were. So it's not going to be an easy game. Just have to hope that maybe Spurs just starting to find their own rhythm again a little bit in some respects. They've got players that are you know, finding the net. They've got defensive players that are doing quite well as well. So it's going to be a great game. Obviously, they quite comfortably beat Newcastle at the Spurs stadium, at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. However, that was a bit of a shattered Newcastle. They were out, I think they'd played a million games in a few days at that point and had a lot of injuries like Spurs did. But still, they knew how to play them. So it'd be interesting to see kind of how much both teams have learned from that game and what comes of this one. Because I think I'd be interested to see whether he sticks with the same starting 11. My gut would tell me probably not.
No, I think he changes it. I think he definitely changes his midfield. I think back four stays the same. Yeah, Yves Bissouma has been virtually an undroppable for Spurs this season. I think it's 23 starts. The one appearance off the bench came straight after he returned from AFCON. He started well against Forest, getting some shots off, but then he just seemed to all go to pot a bit. Yeah. In Spurs' midfield in the second half of the opening 45 minutes. So I, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg and Rodrigo Benteke for me have played their way into the team. I thought both were really good. Yeah, there were a couple of instances late on where Højbjerg gave the ball away, including one pretty dangerous pass across the face of his own box. But on the whole, I thought they did really well, just helped Spurs gain control in midfield and just show that experience and leadership in there. I think that's going to be needed at St. James's Park. It'll be a really, really tough game. Newcastle have done well on home soil this season in the Premier League. I know it's been a bit of an up and down year for them, especially compared to last year when they were just absolutely fantastic and gunning for Champions League football. This season, it's 10 games they've won, drawn three, including one against Everton recently, and then they've lost three at home. So going to be a tough one, but Spurs have done all right on the road. I think it's 6 wins from 15. So they'll be looking to make it 7. But yeah, for me, I think there'll be a couple of changes in midfield. And then probably your only other question mark is, does Dane Kulusevski come in on the right? Maybe for Brendan Johnson. But Johnson, for me, has done really, really well in recent weeks. And I think he deserves to keep his place in the team. The only other one you can maybe think of is if Richarlison's back fit after missing out last week and in a position to start. But I think it's more than likely that if he is back in the squad, that he will be a place on the bench to begin with.
Yeah, I think probably just the two midfield changes. That's all I would imagine, unless he really feels he needs Kulusevski for, I don't know, the running element of it. And you keep looking at all these stats about the most chances created for Spurs, and Kulusevski is still way at the top. He's right up there at the top. So I understand that, people have currently got him down as the one who shouldn't be in the team, all this sort of stuff. But he does actually create more chances than anyone else for Spurs. I'm sure Postecoglou is well aware of that. But personally, I think probably Bentancur, Højbjerg come in. Unless he feels like in training, Bissouma is like trained like a madman to show that he needs to start again. You never know. But I'd agree. I think in terms of the experience, I think the thing with Bissouma that he does bring you, other than the 20 minutes at the end of the half the other day, is he does have a bit of a calm head when he's in, with his back to his, with his facing his own goal when he receives the ball on the edge of the Spurs box. I think that's what Postecoglou loves about him, the ability to turn in those situations. Whereas exactly like you said, we saw Højbjerg do one of those and it went horribly wrong. He can do it, but there are occasions when he can very much switch it off. He's not ideal under pressure in those moments. So you're going to probably get quite a bit of that at St. James's Park with Newcastle pressing and the crowd behind them, willing them on. So I wonder whether, if one of them isn't going to come in, maybe it is Højbjerg. Maybe Bissouma does keep his place and he plays Bentancur as well. But yeah, if I'm Højbjerg, I would be very disappointed in that, because I think he did enough to suggest he should start at both ends of the pitch as well. He does he's more of an attacking threat than Bissouma is, and he contributes more in that area of the pitch. So, yeah, tough game, very tough opposition, tough place to go. But these are the kind of games that if Spurs do, as Postecoglou says, want to mount some kind of title challenge next season, that's what he's expecting of them and the players are expecting. Got to go to places like St James's Park and not be overawed by it, and certainly not have anything resembling that catastrophic mess of last season.
I just wonder with Bissouma if the time is right just to give him a breather. It might be beneficial, as it was for Brendan Johnson a few weeks back, when it was basically just have a go on the bench, just watch the game, and then go on and make an impact. And you know, that might be the catalyst for Bissouma getting back to his best levels, because we've not seen him at his best since probably October, since that red card against Luton. It was absolutely sensational in the opening weeks of the season, and he's not been at the top of his game since October. And those suspensions, I think it was 3 in total, the AFCON tournament, it's meant it's been a really, really stop-start period for him at Tottenham of the past few months. And Tottenham need to get him back to his best, and he needs to be at his best, especially if Spurs are going to be looking at bringing in a new number 6 in the summer. So he needs a big, big end to the season.
The only thing I would say very quickly is, you're saying he's had a stop-start season, and then you're saying that you should stop and start him again, like bring him out. He hasn't really played that much football. That's the problem.
But I think it might be the last 7 games he started, and it's one of these where he's not been at his best. So either
you keep
playing him, try to play him into form, or do you just go for one game, right, we'll drop you down to the bench, and that might work.
Yeah,
we don't know.
Yeah, it could do. Like you say, Johnson's a good example. Someone that sat on the bench, looked exactly how they were going to impact games, where they could kind of do what they needed to do. I'd hoped it was going to happen with Kulusevski. It didn't, though. He kind of came on and was a bit wasteful the other day. But I take your point. I just wonder whether, in terms of kind of bringing him out, whether it actually does interrupt his flow. But then I guess he's already done that by taking him off at half-time. So, yeah, maybe.
Well, we'll find out in the weeks ahead whether that is the case. Yeah. But I think all eyes will certainly be on the team sheet at St James's Park. I was actually looking at Tottenham's record at St James's of the past 10 years. What do you think it's like off the top of your head? Because I'm sure everyone will probably just remember 6-1 defeat last season, 5-1 defeat end of 2015-16 season.
Yeah, well, even without what I'm guessing you're setting up, I think I probably would have said reasonably decent anyway. I don't remember too many defeats, you know, going back to even like Timotei Atuba's amazing left-footed rocket kind of thing and things like that. And yeah, I don't remember too many of them. And Tongi scoring a lovely goal there as well. There were quite a few where they've done all right there. That was one of Nuno's last few games, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Tottenham's last victory at St James's. Since the 2013-14 season at St James's, Tottenham won 6, drawn 1, lost twice. Really impressive record. Like, it's just, as I was saying, it's just a big, big defeat. So everyone remembers.
I want them to send you into the dressing room before the game and tell them those stats. Just make sure. Although Ange doesn't like the past, does he? Everything's different. Never look back. I hope they don't look back because, last one was rubbish. Is it a different Newcastle now? Maybe that's another thing to put into there. Although, obviously, they were a bit of a force way back. It's going to be very much its own game this time. And hopefully Spurs a similar performance to the one at home would be lovely.
Yeah, hopefully a change in fortune in regards to the 12:30 kickoffs as well, because this is the 5th one for Spurs this season, all being away as well. Started well at Bournemouth and Luton, but then it was that, you know, disastrous late defeat at Wolves in November, and then another late goal in the draw at Goodison at the beginning of February. So that's really unusual for a team to have 5 12:30 kickoffs and all be away from Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
And it's not even a team in European competition. Right? There's like no reason for them to have all these early ones either. Normally they do that if the team's got like a Tuesday match the next week, don't they? Just to get them as early away from it as possible. Yeah. It's just stupid. We've got to just leave so early on Saturday morning to get there as well. And I'm sure everyone travelling up there is doing it. And even for the fans, they're up in the gods as well. They have to kind of sit all the way up there, whereas we just get so... Although it's supposed to be quite a nice day, I think, at the moment on Saturday. Whether that extends all the way up north there, I don't know. But down south, it's supposed to be very nice. So maybe we'll get a sunny day for a change.
Well, I think it was supposed to be a nice day 12 months ago, and it absolutely lashed it down in the end, didn't it? So,
brilliant.
I wonder if it's the weather.
No, that's fair.
Yeah. A couple of other things to note in terms of Tottenham fixtures. There was an announcement from the Premier League yesterday regarding, I think, the final or the penultimate round of fixtures. Spurs play Burnley. That stays Saturday, May the 11th, 3 p.m. kickoff. Now have a date in the diary for Tottenham's Premier League game against Man City. That was due to take place next weekend, but it's not, as City are in FA Cup semi-final action. That's Tuesday, May the 14th, 8 p.m. kickoff. And then Spurs will finish the season 4 p.m. at Sheffield United, on Sunday, May the 19th. So yeah, I think that's about it for the second episode of Golden Guest Hot Tottenham this week. We'll be back early next week to discuss, hopefully, a win at St James's Park.
Well, just very quickly before we go, only because I just remembered it, the Tottenham Hotspur win, of course, this weekend. The women have got their semi-final against Leicester City at the Spurs Stadium. I think that's an early kickoff as well. That's 12 p.m. I think as well. So massive game for them as well. And I think, you know, there's still no doubt probably plenty of tickets to go and see that as well. So that'd be a huge occasion. It'd be great if both men and women's team could have a very big weekend. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, huge weekend for the football club coming up. Right, we'll leave that there for today's latest episode of Golden Guest Talk Tottenham. As ever, thank you for tuning in, and just keep with us at football.london for all your latest Tottenham news. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/goldguest. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support our podcast. The link is in the episode description box.